You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Humanitarian Radio. I am host Janie Beauclair.
And I'm Tony St. Tone.
And we, if you are joining us for the first time, we're a feel-good show shouting out some good news from around the world. And you can expect some great positive music by St. Tone today and some innovative guests each week. And also what's going on around the United States on our events calendar.
Today we have two really great guests. First, we have Cynthia De Jesus from Miss Wheelchair California. She's the CEO, and she was also crowned in 2013, and she's going to tell us all about the organization. Second, we have from Comic Karma, John Parenzi. He is a comic, and he also is the host of a blog talk radio show out there, and he's going to talk to us about how comedians have taken tragedies in the past and how they've turned it into comedy. So some really interesting things to talk about today. Here are some positive upcoming events that might be happening in your area. Go to our events page at humanitarianradio.com to learn more. On Monday, March 30th through Saturday, April 11th, Working Wardrobes is doing a prom dress and accessory drive to help 50 girls go to the prom in style.
On April 12th, we have the Soul Tones in concert. And April 18th is Arbor Earth Day. And if you want to sign up for a really great retreat on April 24th to 26th, don't forget to check out Therese Hartman's Allowing True Love Retreat in Sedona, Arizona.
And last but not least, on April 27th through 30th, it's a Monday through Thursday, we have Imagination IQ. And you can learn more about all these great events that are going on. Go to humanitarianradio.com and click on the events page. From there, you'll learn more about it, and we'll also give you links to the actual page where you can find out everything you need to know.
Yes, and if you have an event that you'd like us to broadcast, feel free to reach out to us on humanitarianradio.com or our Facebook.
Hey, it's time for our positive quote of the day. Today's positive quote comes to us from Corey Ten Boom, a book author best known for The Hiding Place, which describes the ordeal of her and her family helping many Jews escape from the Nazi Holocaust in World War II. Worry does not empty tomorrow of its troubles. It empties today of its strength. And there's a lot to be said there, because if you think about worry, worry is thinking of the worst case scenario that could possibly happen. And all of your emphasis is going on the worst case scenario, as opposed to the best case scenario. And if you believe you get what you focus on, then this quote is perfect. Worrying does not empty tomorrow of its troubles. It empties today of its strength.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's those simple little quotes that make you think the hardest. I really appreciate those. So listen, we're going to take a quick commercial break and say thank you to our sponsors. And when we come back, we are going to talk about fabulous things that are going on in the world today. We're going to have two great guests come and join us, and we're going to play some positive music by St. Tone. So stay tuned.
USALuxuryDirect.com. 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 Top name brands from around the world, sold at discounted prices. Hundreds of items to choose from. Put Humanitarian Radio in the coupon zone for a 10% discount at USALuxuryDirect.com.
Positive affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musician St. Tone. Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience, at www.sttone.com.
We can always work it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes.
We choose to end.
For music with a positive message, check out sttone.com. And it is time for some good news for your soul.
Ah, yes. And let's talk about today's good news.
Mm-hmm.
You would not believe what is happening in New York City.
Tell me.
The air is getting cleaner.
In New York City.
In New York City. Mayor Bloomberg, who everybody pretty much knows that guy, he is saying that the levels are cleaner than they've been in 50 years and that they've increased by 23%. That the carbon dioxide, sulfur dioxide in the air has gone down by 69% since 2008.
Wow.
That every year they've been measuring the quality of air there and that they've put on so many restrictions on businesses and cars and all of that since those years that they are actually smelling like a rose.
That's great to know because if you've ever been to New York City, you know it has a certain smell.
Aroma. We'd like to call it an aroma.
and it's, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like you know you're in New York City just by the smell of it.
Now, here's another positive thing from California. California is the first state to ban using lead in your ammo. I'm like, seriously, that qualifies as good news on a good news station? I'm sorry. That was very sarcastic.
That was very sarcastic, yeah.
And I did see a TED Talk that I thought was really cool. Here's the thought for the day in TED Talk for World News. The world becomes what you teach. Okay, makes sense. What if a school prepared their children to solve the most pressing challenges of our time for ourselves, for other people, for animals, and for the earth? In other words, what if we educated a generation of solutionaries?
I love that idea.
Solutionaries is a great word.
Well, you know, if you start thinking about it now, is that something that is a program that is in place right now or they're talking about it?
The TED Talk, Zoe's TED Talk X is what this series was called.
Okay.
And there is a young lady on there that is talking about exactly that, that they're putting this in motion around the country.
Right, because I just saw something on TV where they had taken students and they were saying, okay, what would we have to do if we wanted to live on Mars, for example? And they broke them down into four different groups, like the environmental group, the mission group, and things.
Mm-hmm.
And they started getting them to think about these things and challenge them. Now, I think when you get younger minds to think of these things aloud, you might come up with ideas that adults might not ever think about. Because they might be jaded going, well, we can't do this and we can't do that.
Kids are pure. They're not tainted till they get into probably preteen.
Right. Well, now they have a broader mind to think of outside the box.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying is, why can't we just do this? Or why can't we just do that? So I think those are great ideas. And it's empowering kids instead of memorizing some dates
from history. 1942, that was thought about in 1831.
Which is fine. Listen, I think you should know your history, but I think you should also expand on your future. And I think that's what this woman is presenting, saying, hey, here's an opportunity to have your kids think outside of the box and start solving problems that when they are adults, they are going to be facing those types of issues. And when they're running the country, they will have already had been exposed to it as opposed to, well, we learned about Watergate back in 73.
And think of this angle. You know, we performed at the University for Peace in Costa Rica.
Yes.
And all of those students come from all around the world to learn how to teach their country to promote peace.
Right. And how to do open up discussions and solve problems in a peace fashion as opposed to going to war. It's like, how do we resolve this in a nice, calm fashion?
And they don't have an army in that country, so they obviously
figured
it out for themselves. But think about that in relation to this subject with this TED Talk. They're doing that on a college level to train people, like all delegates of their countries send people for this purpose to learn, to be trained. Imagine if you did that at an elementary school, a middle school level, started talking about how to keep peace, how to, you know, be a good human, how to respect your earth, how to do all of these great things. Imagine that at a younger level. So you teachers out there, start influencing these kids to think in a different direction and really start pushing the envelope in broad thought of how to make it a better place for all of us to live.
Yeah, I guess it's empowering kids.
So,
self-empowered.
Once you've accomplished anything in that direction, shout out some good news for our soul and let us know what you're doing.
Yep. We'll be right back with some sponsors, and Cindy is coming right up.
Gilman Amps, we create the tone in your head. Custom-built guitar and bass tube amplifiers.
Hey, everybody. This is David Gilman from Gilman Amps. If you need any repairs, modifications, or restorations of your vintage or modern tube equipment, as well as custom builds, I'd love to hear from you.
For more information, check out their website, GilmanAmps.com, and Facebook /GilmanAmps. We create the tone in your head.
And so we are back with Miss Cynthia De Jesus. Hi, Cindy. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
Great. We're so happy to have you here. We've been bragging a little bit about you in the first part of our show, and it's a delight to have you join us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for helping create the awareness of the organization.
Well, you know, we met you at the Ascent Expo a few weeks back, and we had you on just briefly, just giving your little 5-minute pitch, and I wanted to let everyone know who you were a couple of shows back, but now we can get a little more in-depth about what you're doing and how you got involved, and I think it's a great, great organization. I had never heard of it before until we met you that day and saw you at the booth, so give us a little background on the organization itself. It's Miss Wheelchair California. So just give us a little brief history on how it got started.
Yes. The history on how it got started was in 1974 at Long Beach, Cal State Long Beach. There were some people who, activists, who decided they no longer wanted to be marginalized as people with disabilities. So they band together with the Federal Rehabilitation Act in 1973 and with California Unruh Civil Rights Act. And they created this organization with a little bit of help from our friends. At the time, it was CAF, which was Californians with physical handicap, something to that effect. Today, that organization is known as CDR, which is Californians for Disability Rights. Anyway, those people all got together and they said we should have a pageant and we should find out where to send the title holder to. And the pageant itself is really fabulous because it is in no way a beauty pageant. You know, most people think pageants that it's just the equivalent of a beauty pageant
right.
with people in wheelchairs, but that's not what it's about.
So tell us what yours is about. Tell it, because I have a feeling that it is very powerful women that are very deep and are not just sitting in front of the mirror doing their makeup.
Exactly. basically, it is about what I like to think of as passion, power, and purpose. And what it is the passion to advocate for people in the disability community, regardless of what the disability happens to be, because as far as I'm concerned, there should not be a disability community and an able-bodied community. We're one big community. We're all together. So I believe in the passion of advocating for other people, and that's what they do. And then the power is the ability to speak and not be afraid, but to speak to our legislators and tell them when something is not right in a bill that's coming up, or to affect legislature. And we really do have real-life effects. We've gone in front of Senate committees and congressional committees to explain what we do and why their bill needs to be changed and things of that effect. And then the purpose, of course, along with the awareness, is to affect change.
Excellent.
You know, we really do need to be all inclusive. How we get throughout the day, whether it be a wheelchair or, you know, roller skates or a bike or a car, it's just taking you from one place to the other. So I just see the wheelchair as a vehicle. And once you get to know the ladies that are involved, that are actively involved, like our current court, The wheelchair just seems to blend and fall away because you're so captivated by, you know, their level of intelligence and their passion, you know, to advocate for their fellow human beings. So it's public relations more than anything, and it is affecting the legislative community so that our community can function better.
Now, your personal involvement, you were crowned in 2013, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Congratulations.
So, congratulations on that.
First of all.
Thank you.
Now, were you aware of it prior to that, or how did you learn about it? Did you learn about it and say, I want to be involved, and did you win the title and then became the president, or how did it all come about that your involvement?
Okay. I learned of the organization in 2006. I happened to be at the Pasadena Women's Club doing a lecture because I'm a life coach, and so I was doing a quick mini life coaching thing, and one of the ladies said to me, you should really, as I was leaving, they said, you should really enter into the Ms. Wheelchair California pageant. You would be fabulous. And I was bored. I'm like, oh, I've never heard of that. And she said, oh, yeah, let me contact my friend, Ruthie Goldhorn, who at the time was the president, and she's also a former title holder. She was Miss 2001. And I said, absolutely, I will try to do that. Well, life had me quite busy during that time, so I wasn't able to participate that year. And the following year, my brother had a catastrophic accident and became quadriplegic, and that kind of took up a great deal of my time. So I kind of waited and waited, and when my life settled down a little bit. In 2013, my life coach said, I dare you to join that pageant, to enter that pageant. I want you to take your head out of the books.
Yeah.
Because you're such, I'm very into studying. I'm a lifelong learner.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, do it. I said, well, if I do it, I do it all the way. I do it right. I've got to win.
Yeah.
Atta girl. That was 3 weeks out from pageant date.
Oh, wow.
So you took that challenge very seriously. So just note to self, don't threaten you with anything because you'll prove them wrong.
Well, it's not a matter of proving them wrong. It's a matter of if it needs doing, then I'm going to do it right.
Mm-hmm. So you're 3 weeks out, and here you are. You said, okay, I'll compete, but you know I'm going to take the title if I do.
And what do you? What are the requirements for you? Like, what do you have to do? You know, like in the pageant, they got to wear a bathing suit and they got to flip around, blah, blah, blah. What do you guys have to do?
We don't have a dog and pony show.
Yeah, great.
we don't do those sorts of things.
Awesome.
Our pageantry is more on, based on three primary things. One is accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
So their personal achievements, because many of these women are quite remarkable in just their volunteer efforts and what they've done, and they don't even realize that it's just part of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, their communicative skills, you know, the
right.
ability to be a public relations person, public speaking, their comfort with speaking on the fly, you know,
right.
with a
right.
politician. They actually were judged by politicians this year.
Wow.
So because these are the people they're going to work with, you know, so at first they were just like, oh my gosh, are you serious? We're going to have mayors and the senator's going to be there and all these. And I said, yes, these are the people you're going to be working with.
Yeah.
You might as well be judged by them.
Yeah.
And lastly, it's their perception and projections of the future, you know, how they see things, and how they project themselves into that platform speech that they have, you know. So
right.
You can definitely tell a person's passion by their poise while they're delivering their platform speech.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
That's more or less what we do. So they have private interviews and they have public interviews.
So it's got to be a little nerve-wracking. I did pageants when I was like 15. And I know that at the, you know, when they were asking you the questions and you're having to deliver your little spiel, I know the butterflies used to really crank right about that time. So did you go through the same thing yourself? Was it a nervous, exciting experience?
For myself, I'm very introspective. So as I was listening to the other contestants, I was really digesting what they had to say. So that takes away from the nervousness for myself.
Sure.
And I already know what I'm passionate about. So my platform was anti-bullying, to stop bullying.
Okay, sure.
Because as far as I'm concerned, people are just carts walking around in different vessels, and we shouldn't pick them apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so so I really didn't, I know I'm passionate about, I just wanted to see what other people are passionate about. So I just listened and carefully paid attention to them, which completely took away any nervousness I had. The only one thing that I always forgot was smile. Somebody's always watching. So I have learned smile because somebody's always watching.
There you go.
That's funny. It's funny you say that because Janie says that quite often to me when I'm performing, because we're both musicians, and she's like, smile. I'm like, okay, I'm singing. Okay, I got to be smiling too. She's like, well, you're on stage. So.
Look like you're having a good time. I know you are.
I get that. But I was very fortunate because although my life coach was not there, my fiancé, who is the world's greatest manager, he was in the background. And he would cue me periodically. He was way in the background, mm-hmm. behind all the audience, and he would cue me. You know, and he would smile at me, and that would be my cue. Oh yeah,
perfect.
That's right. I have to remember to smile because somebody's watching. Because he realizes that I'm so introspective as I'm listening to people and wondering, okay, how can I help somebody with that? Because all the platforms, when you think about it, are fantastic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So how do we help that person achieve that? And that's where I go in my head. How do I help that person make that a reality?
Right,
you know?
Right.
So even, you know, because I'm planning on leaving with the clown, so how do I help her with her problems anyway? But that's just me. I just do things to the best of my ability. And so I envision what the ultimate outcome is and go for it.
Have you helped others compete? Like, has anyone come to you and say,
can you coach me?
Can you coach me?
Yes. I've had many people, and actually my girls that I had this year, and I shouldn't say girls, the women I had this year were, but I think of them as my girls. So.
Sure.
The women I had this year, I coached them very, very carefully. And there were some people who were in line also to compete for this year, and I told them they weren't ready, and I told them why. And I said, you're welcome to compete. And I'm letting you know that this could be a hang-up for you. And so they were like, oh, okay. So they're game and they're in line for next year. So I already have four women who want to compete for next year. And but I coached them very well. I told them what to expect in the morning. You know, I was pretty much holding their hand every step of the way whenever they looked nervous. The beauty of me being able to do that is our board mm-hmm. does not vote. We don't get a vote.
Perfect. So then there's no one that can cry foul.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So we can tell them, you know, it's okay to be calm. You're doing great. You know, everything's going fabulous. And we can be there for them and just point out what they need and stuff like that. Where as the judges themselves are outsiders that are judging them. So we just get the finished product
results.
Final person and, you know, we work with them from there on out. Then we, you know, schedule them and I continue to prep them on what to do with their scheduling and stuff like that. So, but they're amazing. And to be exact on how amazing they are, when the final judging was through and we do a point system,
mm-hmm.
and when all the points came in, between the title holder and the first runner-up was 3 points.
Oh, wow.
Between the first runner-up and the second runner-up was 2 points.
Wow. And,
so it was tight.
That's amazing.
Very, very tight.
Now, how
and
many?
The judges, morning judges were different than the evening judges. And the morning judges, they came out of the, they had to actually discuss everything after all the ladies left the room. And they said, this is going to be hard. So the morning judging was 1 point difference between them.
So you have some
people.
Pretty bright girls.
Like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's amazing that, you know, the competition is that tight. Now, how many girls compete? Like, is there a prior competition to get into this competition? Or is it just everyone just goes to this one competition?
Everyone can go to this one competition. However, like I said, when they put in their applications to me and I spent time with them, I told them what they needed to work on.
Yeah.
So I prepped them. So I could have had, you know, 10 people, but why have 10 people if you know that some people are not going to make it and they're all, and they're paying, by
right.
the way,
right.
to actually compete.
Now,
so,
I think that's really... really ethical of you, you know, and really, really cool that you do that for these guys, because I know, you know, from experiences throughout my life, if I had somebody that said, give it another year, you need just a little bit more time as opposed to jumping in things prematurely. Sometimes that jumping in prematurely can make you be scared and not even go forth the next time. So
And it's, it can be devastating
right.
on the... you know, on the ego.
Self-esteem, yeah.
So it can be devastating on themselves and how they see themselves. And I'd rather work with them
mm-hmm.
for the next year, getting them ready.
Yeah.
Than to have them, you know, pay me $300, not make it, and then pay me another $300 next year.
Yeah. And so when is your pageant next year?
Sense. I'm just like, no. Let's work together. And you can shadow the ladies throughout their year,
mm-hmm.
you know. You can watch them do their work and what they do. And there are plenty of events to attend that are no cost. So it's really, I prefer to set people up for success.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess that's the coach in me.
Yeah, right? So, Cindy, when is next year's pageant, and when do people have to enter by?
I don't have an exact date. It will likely be in February next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually took somebody who was amazing 2 weeks out from the pageant. But she was that amazing. She wound up being our first runner-up.
Nice.
And she's very young, too, but she was so articulate and so amazing on the telephone that I said, do you really want to do this? Then
jump in.
For it. You know, and we'll include you in, and we'll, you know, get it all figured out. And so she was a perfect addition. So
excellent.
I'm pretty open. People are already starting to contact me. I prefer to plan ahead of time. That way I can groom them as far as what to expect. So that when they go in feeling calm and collected.
Yeah.
And feeling like, okay, this is good. I have the confidence
I can do this.
To do this. And,
yeah.
And, you know, and I'm motivated. So, and having that much time to get ready is, I think, better for motivationally.
Absolutely.
They see the work and they follow it, and it gets them ready and gets them excited. And, you know, of course, who can't get excited over a whole bunch of beautiful, shiny crowns?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So tell me real quick, because we're running out of time, but I wanted to let everyone know, what is your website? How do they follow you? How do they get involved? Is there a Facebook, et cetera? How do they get in touch with you?
Our website is www.mswheelchaircaca.org, which is mswheelchaircaca.org for our website.
Okay.
They can get in touch with me there. There's a link for contacting us. So if you go to the About key and it gives a drop down that says contact us, and that will send it straight to me. I've get a hold of people right away, usually within 24 to 48 hours, I'll contact people, and we go from there. Sometimes they don't want to compete. Sometimes they just want to volunteer, which we love volunteers.
Excellent, excellent. And you know, I will be one that lets everyone know that, yes, she gets right back to you within 24 hours because you got back to me instantly, which I thought was great. And I appreciate that because, you know, we wanted to slot you in and you got right back to me. And actually, as a life coach, you told me earlier that you like to be 10 minutes early. What was the phrase again? I'm going to let you say what the phrase was.
If you're early, you're on time. If you are on time, you're late. And if you're late, you're fired.
I love that.
Take that, Donald Trump.
You know, I also wanted to quickly mention that you guys are doing fundraising with some apparel. I Heart Miss Wheelchair California, and they can find that on your Facebook, I caught. But it's there's a lot of really cute stuff, and there's a lot of great ways that you can donate and help these guys. And we really, really ask everybody to support her and her team and her people and follow and see what they're up to and give all the love you can to these guys because they're doing really great things.
Yes, and looking at all the events that we have, none of these are paid. Only the La Jolla Festival of the Arts, that's like a $5 entry fee. I think most people could handle that.
Can swing that, yeah.
But everything else that we do, most of the things we do, don't cost to enter because we're serving.
Right.
We are literally serving the community. And if anybody's interested in Capital Action Day, they should get a hold of me and I can tell them how to participate in Capital Action Day. That's a very important thing because we walk right on up to the steps of the Capitol and this wheelchair leads the parade.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great.
Wow.
That's stuff that you know. And again, it's people like you that are shifting the way laws are made and shifting the way people are treated. So I definitely applaud you guys for continuing the great work that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for helping create the awareness because we are here to help. You know, so we oftentimes people don't know what their rights are. Or how to go about finding services. So we've kind of become a StubHub, so to speak, of where to get whatever they need. And if I don't have the answer, I have an army of people around me who can give me the answer all the way up to the Capitol.
Excellent. I want to say that being said, definitely come back and let us know what you guys are doing and what's going on so we can keep our listeners on top of how they can help you and support you guys because we have a really great, great group of listeners and they're all like-minded just like you guys and we're all on the same trail to make really positive things happen in the world and definitely, definitely, definitely lend our support your way.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks. We'll talk to you again soon, Cindy. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay, take care. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye, honey.
Bye-bye.
So every week we love to dedicate a song to our guest, and this week it is Breaking All the Rules That Were Meant to Be Broken. Cindy is a perfect example of a person who is driven and committed to move forward and be the best person that she can be and to help change rules that were meant to be broken.
Said he never lived. Missing me, he did. Oh no, said she's too young. Look at what she's done. I can't say, you can't say. It's within all past reach. Oh Lord, we got to teach her. Yeah. We're breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules now. Meant to be broken. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Breaking all their rules. Breaking all the rules now. Meant to be broken. Yeah. They thought we never fly. Giggles through the night. Now we bounce around the moon. Amazing what the mind can do. Limitation of imagination. Decrease destination. They can't do this. Can't do that. Oh, we're breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules now. Meant to be broken.
yeah, yeah. We're breaking all them rules, breaking all them rules, breaking all them rules now. Meant to be broken, yeah. If I told you we are limitless, would you sit or would you run with it? Break them rules, yeah. Break them rules.
Once again, that was Breaking All the Rules by Saint Tone. You could check out that song at www.sainttone.com. That's SAINTTONE.com. So we're going to take a very short break, listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with John Princi.
This segment of the show, sponsored by Artistic Journey, where we help groups and organizations reach their fundraising goals by providing unique marketing products to showcase their events. Be sure to visit artisticjourney.com, where you can shop for over 750,000 items to put your logo on, all at wholesale pricing. Whether you're looking for some fresh ideas or just need a better price on the goods you currently purchase, let Artistic Journey's years of experience bring your events to a whole new level. Visit artisticjourney.com today.
Okay, and we are back with comedian and host of his own blog talk show. This is John Princi. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Tony. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. You know, we were just talking off the air how we were both raised in the Northeast, and how there's not a lot going on there as far as outdoor activities during the winter months if you don't like snow.
Exactly.
You sort of just stay inside and just try to keep warm, and I think that's your activity, is staying warm,
yeah,
and catching up on the latest movies that are on TV.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you just have like a lifetime subscription to Netflix.
Exactly. Well, listen, Netflix revolves around people yeah, from the Northeast, because they could stay inside most of the time and watch a movie.
Yeah, like buy ownership in DirecTV, you know, so...
Yes, and this is not a sales pitch for either one, because
yeah,
we're not necessarily endorsing their product, but yet they do play a major role. So tell me, John, how did you start in comedy? And then eventually we're gonna talk to you about how you started your blog talk show. But first of all, how did you start off in comedy?
It's pretty interesting. In Rochester, New York, where I'm from, I was basically 9 years old. And I started just doing these impressions of the teachers and students. It just came out of me out of nowhere. I was like, oh my God, I can do this pretty good. And I'm making kids laugh. So ever since I started making them laugh, I just kept on doing it over and over again. I was making fun of the principals in junior high school and more people in high school and my relatives and friends. And of course, then I started to get into acting and doing stand-up comedy. So I started throwing my impressions and characters in there. And just one thing led to another, and I just enjoyed it so much that I said, man, you know, this is what I want to do the rest of my life.
Wow. Yeah. That is awesome. Now, did you get in trouble a lot doing that? Because I know growing up myself, I did the same thing. I was always the comedian or trying to get the spotlight. Being the youngest of three children, it's usually the younger ones that always are, you know, striving for attention. So it's like, okay, what do I do to stand out?
Well, now that's very interesting, because I'm the youngest of three children.
There you go. So that makes total sense.
Two older brothers, and I did get in trouble. I got a story about this, in the book that I wrote. And I'd be sitting in high school, and I'd be in the library, and I'm a big Star Trek fan. So in the middle of everyone studying and reading the notes and things, I go, Skye, beat me up. And then, Captain, what are you talking about? And I start doing all these impressions of Star Trek and Star Wars and other kind of thing. And the second I start doing it, they'd come over and say, excuse me, John, could you please be quiet? People are you know, they're trying to study. Okay. Secretary leaves. I do it again. So then it's like, oh, my God. And then that was it. She came over and said, you know what? You're just a disturbance. You need to get out. And she would kick me out. And I couldn't, like, sometimes I couldn't come to the library for, like, a week. And so you're gone for the rest of the week.
Yeah, but see, for you, you're like, wait a minute. This is the perfect opportunity. Everyone's quiet. I'm sure to get everyone's attention right here, right now.
Right, exactly. Of course, everyone laughed when I did it. So that was like, you know, I'm like the star of the library.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, so that's, you just kept on going from there, yeah. One thing after another.
So from there, you started getting involved in comedy. And, you know, I'm assuming that when you start doing stand-up, I mean, stand-up is probably one of the hardest jobs out there in the world, because it's one thing to make your family and friends laugh. It's a whole different thing when you're in front of strangers who don't know you and don't really know who you are, and they're just like, make me laugh. How intimidating is that, or was that for you to get started?
Well, it is. I still remember the day that the very first time I went on stage, and it was, again, in Rochester, New York, at this place called the Casablanca. And it wasn't even a comedy club. It was just a place they had bands. And comedy was new back then, back in the early, mid-80s. And I just, I remember these guys coming up to me, these Italian guys. I said, hey, Jack, come on, go up and do something. No, like, oh, you're funny. Come on, you do your voice. Come on, just go up and do something. Are you sure? You got this? Johnny, just go up there and do it. So, oh, okay. So I ended up doing it, and I was scared to death. And I can't even remember what he did. It was probably just maybe Stallone or something like that. That was one of my first impressions they did, was Rocky Balboa when he was big. You know, so that's how it got me started. And I liked it, and it just kept on going on and on and on. And so then I started performing there all the time, and I started doing the comedy clubs and things like that. So yeah, it's crazy.
You know, what's really interesting is what you had just said as far as how your friends or uncles, whoever they were, how they encourage you to go up there. They don't really do it gently in the Northeast. They're more like, hey, you're funny. Now get up there. Make us laugh. Come on. No, just go and do it. Make us laugh. You're like, I wasn't really prepared. Don't worry about prepared. Just get up there and do it. You're like, oh, my God, I'm getting pressured to be funny. Okay.
Right.
You know, it's like Goodfellas. You're like, Spider, go get me something. I'm like, wait a minute.
Right. Come on, make me laugh, huh? Come on, go up there. Come on, what a clown? Huh? Freaking guy got there, make a laugh.
Exactly.
Whack you.
It's Joe Pesci, like in real life, going, I didn't realize this. It's like, nope, this is how we do things. We're encouraging you to do it.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. I was at the Indian Wells last week, and Djokovic was playing against, I don't know if you follow tennis, but Djokovic was playing Eisner. And when he was at the top, he was the number one player in the world. I got lucky, I got second row seats. And all of a sudden, when everyone's all nice and quiet, and Djokovic is about to serve, I yell out, hey, you freaking guy, come on, get an ace. Everybody heard it. It's like, ooh, shh. And the umpire's going, shh, quiet, please. You go, all right, you freaking guy.
You're like, listen, I'm right back in the library, and I'm reliving the moment. Everyone's quiet. Now's my moment to strike.
Exactly.
Like, what are you doing?
Exactly. 5 years later, I'm in this huge library with tennis players, and I just got to throw that out. You're a freaking guy. People are laughing next to me.
They're like, okay, that's it. You're out of here. Going to the principal's office.
No, excuse me, sir. One more peep on you, and you're out of the freaking tournament. Okay, you're out of here. Okay, fine. Of course, I didn't say anything after that.
Yeah, well, of course, because that's when you go. Okay, usually I can get away with two of them. The third one, either I'm going to get arrested or beat up. So what do I do?
Exactly. One or two, but the third one, you're out.
You're out. Comics Karma is your blog talk radio show. Tell us a little bit about that and how you got started with that.
Comics Karma started literally 2 months ago, and it came from the book that I wrote a year ago called What's a Little Wind, which is basically a perspective on life from a man who survived Hitler's death camp, Auschwitz. when they talked to him about the Hurricane Andrew coming back in 1992, he didn't care because of what he went through. And he just looked at me, and I go, "You don't care about these 200 mile an hour winds coming towards you, sir?" And he goes, nah, hurricane, shmurricane. And I said, "Why?" And he goes, "I went through, you know, Auschwitz." I go, "Oh, boy, I didn't know what to say." And then he just looks at me after he shows me his numbers on his, you know, arm and so on. And I was pressed. I didn't know what to say. I was like, you know, it's actually sad. And he just looks at me, and then before this, in the elevator, before the floor comes, and he's this old, you know, 80-year-old Jewish guy, and he looks at me and goes, "What's a little wind? What's a little wind?" Compared to what he went through.
Right.
And he left. And I never saw him again. So that's kind of about, you know, obviously 22 years later, I had decided to write a book, and for some unknown reason, this came to my mind. And the whole book is about perspective on life. And I said, "Boy, you know, since I'm a comedian, it would be nice to hear and talk to comedians, because a lot of the comics I know went through some pretty horrible times in their life."
Right,
right. A lot
right.
of people don't know that. They think it's all fun and games and laughter and all that. No, they get into drugs, alcohol, almost died, beat up in some of the shows that you hear on my show. One guy got stabbed by his girlfriend, almost died. Another guy fell off a pier because he was drunk. I mean, horrible things happen. So I decided to go from a book to the podcast, and that way I get to throw in my impressions and voices, because I do voiceover. And the bottom line is comics karma, and it's laughter, learning, and living. So it goes from making you laugh to learning about how horrible life can be, and then living, because it gets better at the end. They got through it, and now some of these people ended up working with Bill Cosby, Robin Williams before he passed away, and they got TV shows going on and all that. So it's that's kind of where that came from.
Really, yeah, and you know, it's really interesting, and I've learned also in the past that a lot of the guys that, you know, that have had traumatic problems, they turn to comedy as therapy, because it's a chance for them to almost talk about themselves out loud and make light of it. So it's like, yeah, I'm not the best looking guy. Yeah, I barely get any dates. And you're like, wow, this guy's got a self-esteem problem. But yet now he's taking that and he's flipping it as something to use for empowerment, or something to use as entertainment. And
right.
Now he lightens it up for himself, and it's therapy for him, and yet it's comedy for everyone else. So
right.
It's really interesting how a lot of comedians have that darker background. Like you said, you would think, oh, these guys are funny, they're lighthearted, they must have had a great childhood. And it's like, no, actually, they didn't. The whole reason why they're out there,
you know,
is
Tony, yeah, and then Tony, and the biggest, most horrific example is Robin Williams.
Yeah. Yeah.
That just said it right there. That's kind of what motivated me even more. I said, my God, this guy's made a living, millions of dollars. He had the whole world loving him, laughing at him for 35 to 40 years. Okay, he has not had another job since he was 25 years old, since Mork and Mindy. And he had wife and kids, and he had the whole world at his feet. And all of a sudden he says, I'm not happy, I'm depressed, I'm going to go kill myself. What?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, he was fighting that for a while.
Comedians are struggling, actors are struggling to make a living, to make, you know, even a few $1,000s a year. So that just kind of blew my mind. I said, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
So obviously the final note on that kind of thing is that, you know, money and fame is not everything.
No. No, it's not. And, you know, you'll find that more and more people, they say, you know, there's different lines. It's lonely at the top. And you go, well, how would that be? It's like, well, the higher up you get, I feel like the more people come about that want to know you, but know you for all the wrong reasons. It's like, hey, Robin, I'd love to be friends with you because you're famous. What can you do for me? As opposed to like, hey, Robin, I like you. You just seem to be a nice guy to hang out with, as opposed to, you know, when are you having your next party, or when is your next movie? Can I be part of it, et cetera? So,
correct. Right. Yeah, that's the part. Right. That's the part. and you know, and dating and getting married. I mean, how do you know the woman is not marrying you because you're rich and famous?
Exactly.
Just because of that. I hate to say it, but I'm sure 90% of the time it is. But it's better to be in a relationship with somebody, you know, years before you're rich and famous, then you become rich and famous, then you know she loves you for who you are.
Yeah, that's the role I'm working on right now. I'm working on that one. I'm like,
me too.
Yeah.
So I'll get there. So any women listening to this, I'm open to meet you. I'll take out the nice dinners. Okay, maybe McDonald's once in a while, but maybe go play some tennis, you know. And then when I'm rich and famous, you'll say, oh, John, I was with you beforehand. This is great. Never lived in a mansion. Well, thank you for being with me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, John, listen, I really thank you for taking the time to share some insight on your career and what you've done in the past and what you're currently doing. I think it's a great program to shine some light on some of these guys that are comedians out there, just to show like, hey, there's a different side to them. But like you said, it's showing people the roller coaster of some of their lives, saying, hey, look, I'm a comedian, but I've had some problems in the past, and having comedy bring them through it is really a great thing, and could be great therapy for others out there who might be going through some difficult times, and just showing that, hey, even though you've gone through some horrific times or some troubled times, there's still a light at the end of the tunnel and life goes on. And here's some perfect examples of comedians who have taken their tragedies and turned them into comedy. I think that's a great thing.
That's exactly what it's all about. Because that's the whole thing is that, you know, if you ever get bummed out and they get bummed out and people get bummed out all the time, when you really think about it and you kind of listen to my show and read motivational books like Dr. Wayne Dyer and all these other great guys, when you really think about it and you think about other people's stories, like, you know, the survivor and so on, when you really think about it and say, oh, you know what? My life is not bad at all compared to other people.
Exactly.
It's your whole perspective on life.
Exactly.
That's the whole thing. It's your whole perspective. It's all in how you think. And you just have to think about the other people out there that passed away, unfortunately. And you thought they had everything, but, you know, there's a really good saying out there that, I think Jim Carrey even had a saying about that, that exactly what we're talking about. He says, if everyone thinks they're being rich and famous is going to make you happy, you're wrong. You have to be happy inside. So what money and fame will do is, if you get it and when you get it, is it'll make you happier. Happier.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You seem like you're happy and I'm unhappy, so I will be happier when things go better for me and that kind of thing. So that's really the whole key right there. It's just being happy inside.
Absolutely. Listen, if you choose happiness first, and above anything else, then you could be happy with money or without money, with fame or without fame. But if you think that one specific thing is going to bring you happiness, most people find that they get the car, they get the house, they get the relationship, and they're still not content, they're still not happy. It's because they put so much emphasis on those one things instead of just choosing happiness. They chose, well, once I get the promotion, then I'll be happier. Once I get the house, then I'll be happier. The nice wife, then I'll be happy. And you go, then they get it and they go, oh, I'm still not happy. It's like, yeah,
right.
You put so much emphasis on this materialistic thing instead of just choosing happiness, saying,
exactly.
I want to be happy wherever I am. I want to be happy either if I'm broke or if I'm rich or if I'm alone or if I'm with many people. That's
really quick story. Yeah, really quick story. I just heard about this on the Success Magazine, and I've been getting that for like 5-6 years. Exactly, Tony, what you just said. There was a gentleman. He bought a company and he sold it. I think it was one of these high-tech software companies. I forgot the gentleman's name. And he's like, he's in his 40s or 50s, and he sold it for like $300 million.
Wow.
And he says, boy, I'm rich. And he did exactly what you just said. He went and bought the beautiful cars, the Rolls Royces. He bought the private airplanes, the Gulfstreams, the mansions. He traveled the world. Doing all these things, he did all these wonderful things, and after 1 to 2 years later, he just woke up and said, "I'm not happy. a gentleman calls him up, a friend calls him up and says, you know, I'm working on a charity for these sick kids and people in Africa, and we need money, and we need some time. He says, all right, I'll go down there with you. So he flies down to Africa with his friend, and he sees all these horrific, sick kids who are disabled and can't walk and have diseases. And he ends up giving, like $100,000, $200,000. And he bought wheelchairs for these kids. And the kids were so extremely happy that they went up to him and gave him hugs and started crying. And he started crying. And he said to himself, you know what? I made more money. This is more happy for me to do this than to get my limousines and my Gulfstream jets. Now that I'm more happy just doing this.
Yeah.
That was an amazing story.
It's an amazing story. And, you know, and that's usually what it all comes down to. So I don't mean to cut you off, but we're running out of time. So I just want to thank you again, John. If you want to check out John's podcast, go to www.comicskarma.com, and you'll see the link below where you're listening to this podcast. But John, thank you again. Be sure to come back and tell us more about what you're doing.
Yes, Tony, we appreciate it, and hope everything goes good with your shows and everyone listening out there. You know, you only have one life. Follow your dreams. You never know what might happen.
Amen.
And I'm definitely a proponent of start that dream at any age. Doesn't matter how old you are, because life is too short and you don't know how much longer you have. So if you wake up one day and decide that there's more to life than where you are, make it happen. If you're looking for a little spark on your any day, you can always go back to humanitarianradio.com and check out any of our previous shows. We do keep them on there so that we can inspire you to find some good news for your soul. Do something great for someone else in your world.
Yeah, and if you know of a story or if you know of someone that should be on our show, by all means, connect with us on Facebook at Humanitarian Radio or go to our website, humanitarianradio.com, and reach out to us. Let us know any good news that you have out there that you want to share with the world.
Make it a good week.
We'll see you next time. Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Humanitarian Radio, shouting out some good news for your soul.